Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, "How can I sell something online?" I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up. They increase sales and they'll make your friends' products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press one for sales, two for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started.
Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. Imagine selling your company, you know, having the exit that so many entrepreneurs dream of, and then having a breakdown afterwards. That's what today's guest says happened to him. I invited him here to talk about it. Joe Palco is the co-founder of Solid Cactus, which has a team of designers and programmers who design and redesign, or who have designed and redesigned more than 3,500 e-commerce sites. I invited him here to talk about what happened as he built it and afterwards. Joe, welcome.
Hi, Andrew.
We were trying to figure out the right way to explain what happened to you. We went with breakdown, but as we both agreed, it doesn't really describe it. What happened after the sale?
Oh, well, after the sale, first I have to say that I couldn't have asked for a better buyer, right? Web.com was really very, very nice to deal with. But you can't forget that when you've built something from the ground up, you know, and it comes time to sell, there's a lot of personal feelings attached to that business, right? So after I sold, I had stayed on in the role of basically still running the company, you know, but I had to now change the culture, you know, and became, even though they did keep a lot of the culture we had in place, I didn't always agree with what I was tasked to do, but
for
I
example,
had to do it. You know, like there's one example I can think of. We used to work an 8-hour day. Our employees work an 8-hour day with a 1-hour paid lunch. So basically they had 7 hours paid, 1 hour paid lunch. And, you know, like that was not the company policy. So we let that go on for about a year. But then, you know, now, you know, a year later, they were like, okay, you know, now we got to get you guys in line with the rest of the company, you know?
And that's that meant no pay for lunch.
What's that?
And that meant no pay for lunch.
Right. Yeah. And you had, well, basically how it worked was you had to work a 9-hour day instead of an 8-hour day. Mm. So, you know, yeah. So it was,
and you're a guy who's used to calling the shots because you're an entrepreneur who has called the shots, and now suddenly someone's calling the shots for you and they're not the shots you want. What happened to you as on a personal level as a result of this?
That's over the time. That's what brought me down, right? Because you fight for what you believe in. And it's, you know, it's not like one-sided, it, you know, it wasn't like me against 10 people, but, you know, instead of things just being like my decision, you know, when you're in the corporate structure, other people have a say, you know? So it was a lot of fighting, and I wouldn't say fighting. It wasn't like we were fighting, but I mean, it's a battle, right? And I was, after being an entrepreneur for basically 20 years, you know, I was tired.
How much did you sell for?
I would say millions. I don't want to go into to details on that, but
were you a millionaire before the sale?
Yes.
You were, because the company was doing really well, Solid Cactus.
Yes, it did. It did very well. I actually initiated trying to sell the company about 6 months before the economy got really bad. I felt it coming, but I didn't know what it was going to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so what was really difficult was I had always been very, very loyal to my employees. They built the company, right? And when the economy really did start to tank, we were only you know, maybe three quarters of the way through planning the sale, and our numbers started to take a hit. You know, so that started to change things because, you know, you figure you're 6 months in and now your revenue's now not what it was, right? So Webb had done a lot of like analysis on the revenue and everything, and they're like, oh, these numbers are coming down. And I had to, it was one of the hardest points in my life was actually laying off people. But I had to lay them off prior to the sale. So it wasn't something that I could just hang on to them and like let it be their fault.
Yeah, let it be the acquirer's fault.
And I never ran every business I had for the most part, including that one, grew year over year over year. But what took place in 2009 was really scary for me. I felt it coming. I knew the economy was too hot and a lot of it was really fake. You know, I was scared, but it turned out to be it was a good move. It really was.
I'm going to tell the story, or you're going to tell the story through my questions of how you built up the company, because that alone is an interview that I think the audience needs to hear. But on a personal level, I know you're willing to reveal a little bit of what happened to you. What do you feel comfortable talking about what happened to you, what you did after the breakdown?
I became, as a person, somewhat numb, I guess. You know, like I really lost my personality. I didn't really notice it, but other people did. You know, to me, I was just guy with troubles.
Sorry, so there's something that I know that we talked before the interview that you might be willing to reveal. Now that the interview has actually started, do you still feel comfortable talking about it?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Sure.
What is that?
When I was in a rut, I found comfort in gambling. And I'm not ashamed to admit it because it at that point became a problem. I guess what the problem is when you just don't know when to stop. Okay. You know, but what happens, and I highly don't recommend gambling to anybody. I to this day like regret that point in my life, but at the same time, it made me a better person.
What kind of gambling?
I have slot machines. I love slot machines. Yeah, but don't think that they're just like penny machines that old people play. There are slot machines that take $100 bills.
How much would you be up or down on a single day?
You know, an average bad day for me was 5,000 down. And an average good day, there were days. I mean, there was actually one time where I went to Las Vegas and I took $5,000 out of my account. I said, I'm just going to spend 5,000. I came back with 70. So there were good experiences too. But
overall, how much would you say you were down?
Oh, boy. I would probably say that it took me for a couple hundred thousand.
Okay.
You know, I didn't gamble away everything. I'm glad I actually got help before.
What kind of help?
You know, I didn't go to a 12-step program or anything. I mean, help just meaning like friends that really cared about me and friends that knew I was on a destructive path and really helped make me, you know, they helped me get busy doing other things because that's what it becomes. It becomes almost like it's like if you were addicted to social media and all you did was sit in Facebook, in front of Facebook all day, right? It's people who develop addictions like that do so because they're running away from things. And the one thing that I learned was when you go to a casino every day and you become a regular, the people who are there every day tend to be widowed women who've lost their husbands and are just there because it's something that makes them feel better. You know, where you know, in the real world, you'd hope that your family would spend more time with you, and you know, maybe they don't even have family. You know, so it was really good in a way because it touched me. Like I got to meet a lot of wonderful people who all had problems. And you know, one thing interesting in that, you know, in gambling is that like the regulars go every day. Right. And of course it didn't help that at the time I was still living in Pennsylvania. I would go back and forth between Pennsylvania and Florida. And I had a casino by my house in Florida and a casino by my house in Pennsylvania.
So you were a regular in both.
Oh yeah.
And there's something about being in front of a machine like that almost, it seems to me like you were saying, I don't want to talk to people.
It's exactly what right? It is. It's mesmerizing. You look at pretty colors and lights, and You're not even there for the money. That's what's kind of crazy. You're really there just to do something to take your mind
Like a
off of how
couch
bad your
potato.
life sucks.
Yeah. All right,
Yeah.
let's get into how you got here and specifically how you built this phenomenal company. It all started with a ferret store online, right?
Yeah. Back in 94, Scott and I,
Scott San Filipino,
co-founder,
San, Scott San,
Filippo.
Phil, sorry, you say
Filippo.
Filippo.
Scott Sanfilippo. We were in college and we started selling ferret supplies. And we were actually not selling them online at the time. We were selling them at ferret shows. We would actually go, and people laugh when I say ferret show. I can't tell you how many times I've said the word ferret show and people bust out laughing. There really are ferret shows where people come with their ferrets and they win prizes for having the most perfect ferret, the big ferret, the ferret with the bushy tail, you know. And we both liked ferrets, so we started vending, like Scott and I, as a part-time job kind of thing. We're like, oh, we'll go to the shows, we have ferrets, we'll sell products. And at the time, Scott was working for an internet services provider. So one day he built a store while he was at work. He worked in the tech support department. Don't forget, we were young. We were like 19, 20. And he's like, hey, you know, we could sell these products on the internet. Check this out, you know. And the internet, like, was something that people didn't have then. It just started to creep up, you know, like we had like AOL for DOS at that time, you know, and they were just moving over to the Windows version. And so, you know, there wasn't shopping cart software back then. So it was basically, so I'm not a computer programmer, but there were scripts in place that you could have a shopping cart and collect merchandise. And what would happen is we would call the customers, they'd place an order. We'd log into our order screen. We'd see new orders. We'd print them out. We'd call the customers, get their credit cards, you know. And I was like, this is really fun. And then add technology to that, you know, where the internet started to grow really fast. Domain names weren't $300 a piece anymore. People were getting internet. I'll never have such a fun time in my life as that time, because we actually built that company up to be pretty large before we felt it or sold it over to Foster's and Smith. But e-commerce was really interesting because we didn't have competition. So we were a niche player, which is what pretty much succeeded on the internet 10 years later. But we found that by accident, and it was successful. A lot of that was very accidental. The ferret store was accidental success. Everything we did worked. And we really just weren't trying, you know, it just sort of happened. But when you have a good idea and nobody competing with you, and because it was such a niche, we were able to build a community around the product we sold. So that's how, you know, that's basically how that happened. And we sold that in 2007.
What'd you sell that one for?
That one I don't want to say either, because that was private. There was
Was
a
that
private
millions also?
transaction. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
So this little ferret store that you guys launched online back before most people even knew what the internet was ended up being such a hit that you were able to sell it for that much money, for millions.
Yeah, it did. Well, it did millions in revenue, but it became harder for it. Like, it became harder because competition started getting stronger and stronger, right? So we were actually on a down cycle when we sold out of that business.
Okay.
But it was still a really strong business with a really strong customer base, but competition was eating away at our average order values. So,
When
you
you
know, revenue
sold, was it
cycles.
all cash up front, or did Doctors Foster and Smith buy it with an earnout that took forever?
No, there was no earnout. There was actually no earnout on either sale.
Wow.
Yeah, I was lucky in that regard. You know, it was so long ago. I actually think with Dr. Foster's and Smith, it was a cash sale, but I had to clear up all the accounts payables. So they
Sounds
didn't want anything lagging. And it was just actually the same thing with web.com. Anything that we had that was an accounts payable. Theirs was a little different. At the web.com sale, they paid off all of our AP physically, but with money from the sale amount.
I see. So they basically said, hey, before you fully get this cash, you need to pay off your accounts payable.
Yeah, they actually paid them off. In the web.com one, I gave them every piece of accounts payable, and their accounts payable department went through and satisfied all those debts because they didn't want anything to come back.
Yeah.
So they wanted to make sure they were all clear.
Okay. So how do you then launch Solid Cactus?
So it's now like 2000. Mm-hmm. And we wanted a redesign for the Ferret store. So we put, went out online in the forums where people built websites and we were like, hey, we need a designer to redesign our website. And we found one and they did a really good job. It actually won an award back then. But at the same time, there was some guy who sent me an email and said, I can do your whole redesign and program it for $500. And I was like, this can't be real. I mean, even then labor wasn't that low, you know? So I said, no, thank you. And then they sent me a mock-up. They're like, this is what we would do. And it was unbelievable. It was a beautiful web design. And I'm like, okay, so what's the deal? I actually started talking to them through Yahoo Messenger. And, they went on to explain that, we live in a country called Kyrgyzstan and, we pay $25 a month for rent. And, we can – U.S. dollars mean a lot here, so we can work really affordably, And I was like, wow, there's such a demand. I mean, I wanted a website. I'm sure anybody else who – at the time we were on the Yahoo Store platform. So – and they knew Yahoo Store. Like they had found it very interesting. And I don't know if you've ever heard of, Yahoo Small Business or Yahoo Store, but it doesn't work like a normal shopping cart in the design aspect. You have to know the language that Yahoo created. It wasn't – I mean, go back. It was Via Web and Via Web sold it to Yahoo. But when Via Web created it, they built a programming language, its own language. So the only way you could design these stores is to learn that language, right? And they did an amazing job. So I was like, I'm going to spend my time. Scott continued to run the Ferret store, and I started to run – I built Solid Cactus basically with these two guys from Kyrgyzstan. And I would play the role of the salesperson, and I would sell the store, and they would build it. And they were building amazing websites for the time.
On top of the Yahoo platform.
On the Yahoo platform, which was very hard for most people to even design on. Again, a niche with no competition because mm-hmm. there was no competition there. And we started doing – I would sell a couple a week, right. And they started to get so busy that, they're like, oh, this is really hard, And I'm like, this is such a viable business. What if I apply – to the INS and see if I can get you guys to come over here to the States and then we can start a business because you know this language that nobody else knows. And that was a critical piece, right? Because you just can't hire people from overseas and bring them to the US. There has to be like a real need, right? So I did all the paperwork. I ran the ads, couldn't find anybody. And then their visas were approved. So it was a really fun experience in my life because I got to meet these people from – we were already like friends, right, because we like were online 8 hours a day together. But I never met them in person. So when they had come to the U.S., they took such a risk. I had a place for them to live. I got them a car. I had like all this stuff in place so that they could actually function when they came to the U.S. They had no idea if I was going to kill them at the airport.
Right.
But they did. They just picked up and they moved here. And
why did you want them to move there? I mean, I was looking at the notes that Jeremy made on your pre-interview with him, and it said rent was $25 a month. And I said, Jeremy must have been typing quickly because you guys were talking quickly. There's no way it cost 20. And then you said $25 a month, and I thought that seems like a steal. And now their costs are low. You can sell it at a really low price here in the U.S. and just keep growing your business.
But scaling it was a problem. Like, in order to do volume, we had to teach people how to program in this language.
You needed more people, and you needed them to do it the way that these guys from Kyrgyzstan were doing it. And the only way they could teach it was in person, be there watching.
Right. And they could have did that there, but, the risk would have been, what about a year later? Would they just stop talking to me and go do this themselves?
Right.
So to have them here, to me, it was a trade-off. It was a 50-50 trade-off, right? All right, I'm going to build a company, but I'm going to also help you make a better life for yourself.
Right.
And Andrew and Stas, Stas still works at web.com. So he's still there all these years. Andrew actually works for eBay.
For eBay.
He left. Yeah, he left when they became they got green carded around 2009.
And so they could go off and do their own thing.
They could. Stas never did.
All right. So you have them in the country. Now you need to get customers. How did you get customers?
It was the easiest business I had ever built.
Really?
It was, once you the verticals, right? If you say you would redesign a website for somebody selling children's clothing, all 12 competitors of that website would then be there wanting their site redesigned.
And how would they know that you're the guy who did it?
By putting on the footer.
You always had on the footer.
Yeah, we always put on the footer, designed by. At the time, we had started as Y Store Builder, but then Yahoo had an issue with that later on. Like, they didn't like the Y because it was indicative of, like, maybe we worked for Yahoo.
Right.
So we became Solid Cactus.
How'd you come up with that name?
We made it up. Actually, my first employee, which, considering that Andrew and Stas were not – even though they were employees, they were founders, right? His name is Kurt, and we were just me, Kurt, and Scott were sitting in the room, like, "What could we name this company? What could we name this company?" And I actually think it might have been Scott that did a search for cactus, and he's like, "Well, cactuses are really cool. Look, we can get this domain name, Solid Cactus," and we're like, "Yeah, that sounds fun. We can make cool logos with that." You know, that's all it came down to. It was kind of strange because for years and years and years, our customers always thought we were in Arizona.
I wonder if I even thought that when I interviewed Scott. So I see being in the footer is a huge help. I've seen this so many times from guys who make Facebook apps to, I was just talking to Aaron Fulkerson of MindTouch, and he said, whenever we created a wiki for our clients, we would always have our link in the footer. But another thing that you guys did, I think, was you were in message boards, weren't you? In the Yahoo store message boards where people who were building these stores talked?
That is true. That was back even before Solid Cactus and before Yahoo Y Store Builder. We had these forums still exist today. A guy named Don Cole runs them. And it's all Yahoo's merchants, and it's not it's not a Yahoo-owned property. It was actually formed way, way, way back by some guy who then no longer had his Yahoo store and passed the keys over to Don. And it's called yourstoreforums.com, and it's again called that because it used to be Y Store Forums, and then Yahoo had a hard time with the Y, so they turned it into your.
So the idea there was, hey, we have our own store on the Yahoo platform. No one else on the planet understands how this whole language works except for people who have their stores on their platform too. Let's chat with them and learn from each other. And
yes,
as you guys were learning from each other, when you started to build up Solid Cactus, you had connections to potential customers. Did customers really come from there? Or am I assuming that?
It started there. Yeah. I mean, that was also a way, people talked like, "Oh, Solid Cactus just did my website. What do you think?"
I see.
And I think what really helped build Solid Cactus at the time was that the designs were for their time amazing. Andrew was the creative designer and he was really good. I mean, he was just above and beyond what we had here in the U.S. Not to say that there wasn't designers that were that good, but that could actually design for a Yahoo store.
Okay.
Because things had to be like laid out the right way. And the thing was, I saw a real business opportunity because there were some people that actually figured out how to build these stores, but not many of them had an entrepreneurial vision. Like, I knew that none of them would ever really turn it into a company. They would just basically be a subcontractor type thing. Like, "Oh, I'll build it for you." And then they fall off the planet.
Right.
So as we grew Solid Cactus, it also helped grow competitors. So we actually, a couple companies did form, but none of them really ever got to be the size of what we were. But then, after we sold to web.com, their focus wasn't totally Yahoo stores. They still build them. Like, they will still build a store for you on the Yahoo platform, but it's not their core business.
You guys branched out, didn't you? Beyond, what's the first thing that you did after redesigning Yahoo stores for people?
So I thought, in order to grow this company into something that would be more than just a design firm, we had to start building products and services around the customer base we had. So the first product we added was a search marketing department. We started doing SEO and PPC. And that actually still exists today at web.com, and the department is actually really strong and has grown since I've left. But again, that's a good fit for the web.com customer base as well. So they sell that into their base,
Right.
right? After that existed for a couple of years, we created a customer service call center, meaning one of the struggles, what really helped me with Solid Cactus was being a merchant before. I knew all the problems that a potentially successful merchant would have growing their website. So one of the things is, a lot of people who start e-commerce stores, they have a full-time job, and then their store starts to become somewhat successful, but it doesn't make enough money for them to quit their job. So customer service starts to become an issue. So our call center would do anything from take phone orders. It would handle returns, like by issuing RMAs. It would do other things too, like they would do data entry for their customers, add products to the stores. So that, that was how we grew that services part out.
Okay.
I also saw one of the important things was going to be a true service business without a recurring revenue piece was a risk because the revenue is seasonal, right? So you hit parts of the year where it's actually difficult, and then you get into a period where the volume increases so much. Again, it's difficult, but in a better way. Right. So I had wanted to scale Solid Cactus out so that it had not all of the revenue was from design.
And so, what'd you
So,
find that was going to be? Oh, I see. The consistent revenue was from doing this customer service for your customers, helping them
right.
get their products into their stores, etc.
And then we had even built software on top of that. We had two pieces of software that we built. One was an order management system. Primarily because the Yahoo store platform is weak in order management. It's great in some things, like it is a real robust platform, but in order management, it's very difficult.
What do you
Like
mean
if
by
you,
order management?
like your orders come in overnight, and now your warehouse needs to process the orders, it is very, very simplistic. Like you could possibly ship orders twice, not realize you ship things. There's no control, and there was no warehouse module. So if you actually wanted to maintain inventory, and ship it was just a very simplistic model, right? So if you were doing day, if you were a merchant processing 50 orders a day, it would get uncontrollable with back orders. You
I
wouldn't know
see.
what you were sending out. And, so we built software for that for our top tier customers. And we also built a product called Feed Perfect, which I also do believe still exists today. And that's a product that puts your merchandise into shopping.com, BizRate. It's a feed aggregator.
How did you know that what you were building was something that many of your customers actually needed, as opposed to something that only you and maybe two other people who thought and worked like you needed.
We were, we did a lot of things differently. We published a magazine even every 2 months. It was a bi-monthly for our customers. So we were probably pioneers in social media before social media really even existed,
I got
right?
Scott to do an
Before.
interview here because he is so big in social media when it was starting to take off, and because you guys were so big that my audience knew him, even though I don't know that many of them were really, frankly, operating on the Yahoo platform or even were customers. You guys were just online. But how does having a magazine help you understand what to build for your product, for your customers, what they would actually pay for?
Because in addition to that, we surveyed our customers a lot. We talked to our customers a lot. They constantly told us what they needed. Like that was another reason Solid Cactus grew so big. People would call into our sales department and be like, we need a solution for this. We need Yahoo Store to do this. And then we would spec these things out. We'd actually build them for the customers. And then that was an interesting model as well, right? You build it for one customer, and now you sell it to the rest of your customer base. So that was a part
That's interesting. Mike Jones told me that he did that. He built a chat program for one of his customers, but he retained the right to sell it and to make it available to others. And that's how he knew that he could pay for his development work. Is that what happened with you?
That's exactly what
we did. So there was no loss, but you minimize your risk, and you understood that this was necessary to at least one person who was willing to pay for it.
Right. We would do a little more thought process on that, though. If we were building it for one person and we didn't think that anybody else could use it, then that customer would pay the development costs. But if it ended up being a feature that we thought we could sell to our entire user base, we would do that exactly. We'd take the development costs, own the product, and clip it on. And one thing that made it so easy to scale the Yahoo Store platform for us was it's a very reliable platform, but it doesn't have a lot of features built in. So we at one time we had 30 plugins. I mean, there were just so many plugins
selling them all.
Oh yeah, every one of them sold for different prices, and that was a lot of the revenue.
What's a product that failed for you guys? The biggest failure, maybe.
I'm not even saying this out of pride. I don't think we really had a product that failed. The one that didn't meet my expectations was actually Feed Perfect. And that's only because even though the product worked really well, we discovered that most people didn't want to actually take the time to do that. Like, they wanted their products on the shopping portals, but they didn't want to take time to do so. They really thought it should be just a turnkey solution. So what it actually ended up was, we ended up with a lot of web design companies using it like as a back-end platform for reselling the service. And we didn't even – that wasn't the intent when we built it. So
right. Was it so difficult for them to – because first of all, if you have a store, you want to publicize it as much as possible, especially if it's on free platforms where people are actually looking to buy. Is the software so difficult that people just didn't want to deal with it, or did they not recognize the value of that kind of promotion?
No, the software was not difficult at all. It was actually pretty easy to use. We spec'd it really well. What happens over the course of time with e-commerce merchants is they started drop shipping, right? So people who were selling early on, like maybe around 99 or 2000, had product and they were shipping it from their own house, probably, right? Well, then the drop shipping model became more and more popular. So companies would be giving you these huge data feeds, and they'd be like, oh, just sell these products online. You dump them in your store. We had customers with 50,000 products. So I remember one with 100,000 products. Well, in order to do taxonomy, like, you have to basically say, like, okay, these 500 products are, beauty products. And then if you really want them to sell even more, like, you have to go down levels. And it's still kind of a problem with taxonomies today, is not everybody uses a unified taxonomy. So if you wanted to sell on shopping.com, maybe they have a category for lipstick, but BizRate doesn't, or whatever, right? So it's almost like a full-time job just to categorize products, and people don't want to do that.
I see. All right, that makes sense. All right, I see how this company is growing. I understand now why you wanted to sell. You were recognizing a change in the market. On a personal level, too, did you want to sell because it was time for you to cash out?
I wanted to sell more than Scott did, honestly. Scott actually was very resistant. That was also a problem, like, when one of the negative aspects. Scott really didn't want to sell, and I did want to sell because I thought this – I saw what was coming. Like, I'm always the guy who – I was more of the business manager, and Scott was the social guy, right? So I saw trends developing within our customer base that I didn't like. Like, we'd never have customers that couldn't pay their bills, and this was starting – and I was like, there's something – this is going to be really bad. I think we're going to have a part of our economy that we've never seen before. I felt it about a year before it happened. Because I do like following markets and reading about finance and, that kind of stuff interests me. So I was somewhat paranoid. I'm like, we're going to have to get out of this because we're going to have a time period that's going to be very, very difficult. you know, and Scott was the social media guy who loved to do marketing, right? So he was like, no, I don't want to sell. I don't want to sell. And I pushed and pushed and pushed. So that became a very rocky point in our friendship.
How do you get over that?
I think it's like anything. If you were married for 20 years and then you got divorced, it's going to be very hard to dislike somebody or be mad at somebody that you spent the majority of your life with. Right. So running a business is not much different than almost having a relationship in a sense. I mean, it's a different kind of relationship, but you spend so much of your time brainstorming and trying to grow this business that, you know, your 9 to 5 is, you know, that's the thing. You have a life outside of work, but then you have your work life, and it's probably more time than you actually spend with your friends and family.
I was talking to Shahab from Co-Founders Lab, who helps entrepreneurs find their co-founders. And I asked him about this. This, of course, is a big issue. Do we sell? Do we not sell? What direction you take the company in mm-hmm. general is big, but this one's huge. And he said, you know, when you come up with problems like that, sometimes the best thing is to take a step away from that question and go deal with questions where you agree so that you're not battling each other and then come back to it. Mm-hmm. I thought, all right, that's helpful. What did you guys do? Because this was a clearly different set of directions that you guys were each championing. How did you – and you ended up persuading him. How did you persuade him?
The course of selling to Web was – it took so long. It took almost a year. So I entertained it really for like the first 3 months, and Scott was like, no, but I kept going. So then, you know, 3 months in, Scott started to get more on board with it. But, you know, he still didn't want to sell. But he started seeing the changes in trends too. You know, I never expected something like one day Wall Street was going to like seize up and there was no money. I didn't think that was happening. I just thought we were going to move into a, you know, not a depression, but a heavy recession. And I was like, you know, it's fun growing a business when everything's on the upswing, but downsizing it is not going to be fun. So I really wanted to get out of it, you know, while... Because, you know, there's a large company with a lot of resources. We bootstrapped this thing. Neither one of us owed money to VCs or
or debt. Bankers. Did you have debt?
Well, there was debt, but it was traditional banking debt.
What? You know, how did you meet web.com?
You know, and that actually didn't come up in the pre-interview, and that's kind of an interesting story. Prior to web.com, they were website pros. The CEO of... web.com's David Brown. He's a real awesome guy. He had an SVP that pretty much did, you know, everything for him. He was, you know, David's right-hand guy. And after somewhere in the web.com acquisition, he left and he moved back to Washington State where he lives, and he started his own e-commerce store, and he decided to put it on the Yahoo platform. So he hired Solid Cactus and we built his store, and he loved the process. Like, he loved how we did the design. And this was somewhere around maybe 2008. It was like a year before. This is actually how it started. And he had called us and he's like, hey, you know, I actually just left Website Pros and I'm fascinated by how organized and how professional you guys conduct business. And I know how difficult it is to sell, you know, design. And he goes, you guys have it down, and I want to introduce you to my friend David Brown. So that's basically – it was a customer. He was a customer.
I think I might have interviewed the guy. Yeah, he sold web.com. This is Joe Griffin, who ran web.com and sold it to them, to Website Pros, I think.
It wasn't him.
Oh, he's not the guy who had that domain?
No, this guy, he was with David Brown when David Brown owned Website
Pros. No, I don't mean that this was the senior vice president. I mean the guy who sold web.com, the domain and company, to David Brown.
That's an interesting story, actually. That's really convoluted. Web.com was a formation of Interland. It used to be a web hosting company, and then they were going bankrupt, basically, and some group of investors came in and picked the stock up, repackaged it, and then sold it to Website Pros. And then Website Pros took the name web.com because it was a better name.
I see.
But yeah, that's there were a lot of people involved in that.
Did you try to sell it to other companies too? Did you look for alternative offers?
No, I didn't. But after I started working with the web.com sale, I thought, you know, I better get another buyer, because otherwise I'm not going to have leverage. So I actually did find a VC company that, you know, VC firm that was really interested in what we did, and I did use them as leverage. Before I had to commit, I kept going back and forth trying to raise the price up. So,
It seems like that's one of the
part of
challenges
negotiating.
of working in, I guess you were in Florida at the time, right?
When we had Solid Cactus before we sold it, Scott and I both were in Florida, but traveled back and forth. So we like, you know, but not as often as I had to after I sold it to web.com. So I would go to Florida for 2 weeks, then I would come back to Pennsylvania and all that stuff. So, but after we sold, web.com was like, no, we want you to run this location and we want you to be here. But I
I
wasn't
see.
really willing to give up my friends in Florida, because for about me, it's all about just being happy and, you know, having friends and living. And I like the life in Florida a lot better than northeastern Pennsylvania. So I would travel every week. So when I was working for web.com, as web.com, I would work basically Wednesdays and Thursdays. Definitely, I would be in Pennsylvania. Sometime I would do Tuesday through Friday, but it would just depend on what I had going on there. So I'd work from home and from our PA location. So I spent 2 years traveling every week back and forth.
Why didn't you quit?
That's one of the things that actually led me to quit,
Why
because I
didn't you
really didn't
quit
want to do
before?
that.
At the point where you were unhappy, you already sold, there wasn't an earnout. Why not say, hey, you know what, guys? I'm going to go start another business.
Actually liked working with them.
You did.
Overall, I liked David Brown and his team. I still do. It is a very solid management team. David Brown is a wonderful guy. I can actually say that about the company that bought me. Yeah, I did. There was a lot of it that I did like. The corporate structure was irritating to me, but not the people I was actually working with.
I see. And so that's what kept you around, and your people, many of them were leaving, weren't they?
Yeah, it was an interesting story because, you know, when we were growing and growing and growing, we always used to buy like a birthday cake every month, and we would this is a funny example, actually. We would celebrate birthdays, and we were always hiring, really. We weren't laying people off, so we were always hiring. So for years, we would always introduce the new hires at the birthday party. And I never really took note. This was my people were doing this, because I had a couple hundred, you know, when actually when before web.com bought us, we had 194 people. We were down to like 140 something, and slowly, as we would lose people, we would replace some, but we wouldn't replace others, all trying to get the labor force just right. So now we're in a situation where the labor force is great, and if somebody leaves, we actually have to hire somebody new. We started wishing people well at the birthday parties when they were leaving, and every month there was like two or three, and we were like, you know, I got an email from one of the employees that was like, why? I find it so demoralizing that you're always at these parties, we're welcoming like people to leave. Why are we encouraging people to leave our company? And I was like, well, you know, I never really thought of it that way, but it's one of those things that actually just happened on its own. Because, you know, like Kathy always used to run the parties, and, you know, she would make them into like, we'd also welcome new employees because we were replacing ones as they left. But it became so apparent that like people who had been there for years were leaving, and we were hiring new people to replace them. So I was like, well, that's a really good idea, Sean, because Sean was the guy who brought that to my attention. He was one of my operations people. And I was like, yeah, we better stop doing that. So then we stopped making it a focal point when they were leaving.
You don't want to celebrate people when they leave, because then to get that good feeling and to be appreciated for everything that you've done and to be noticed for all the things that you've done well, you have to leave.
Right. That's what it turns into. It doesn't start that way, and I can see how it gets that way. You know, even now, working at 3D Cart, we're probably up to 70 some employees here. Relatively many people don't leave. So the few people who have left, which is like a count on one hand, we pretty much do the same thing. We're like, hey, good luck, good luck. You know, but when it starts to become so frequent, it actually is strange. So,
I want to know just a little bit more about how you sold the company, because I know in reading my own emails from people in the audience that knowing how to find an acquirer, how to make that transition from, in your case, customer to acquirer, or from other people's perspective, from stranger to acquirer, is tough. Was it they immediately said, hey, can we buy you? Or was there some way that you let them know that you wanted to sell and that's what instigated the whole thing?
Well, it did start when we got introduced to David. And David, it was kind of fun. I mean, you know, David, we had a phone conversation. And David was like, I want you guys to come down to Jacksonville and see who we are. You know, so we did. We came, met David, and it was really interesting. I met David for the first time. He pulled a file out of his desk, and he's like, I've been watching you for a long time. I know everything about you. And I was like, wow, you know. and we were just real small potatoes in comparison to what they were, you know. But it was a lot of back and forth. They came to Pennsylvania a lot. I went to Florida a lot. A bunch of us went to Florida a lot. My executive team, the people who ran Solid Cactus, knew. So because they were public, you know, there's a whole different mindset. They have to think on behalf of their shareholders, right? So they can't, I don't want to say make mistakes, right? But they really have to cross their T's and dot their I's, you know? So
but the reason that the sale was even on the table is because they're an acquisitive company.
They purchase a lot. Yeah, they're if you go back to the very foundations of what web.com is today, they've acquired a lot. Even when they were smaller, they acquired a lot of small companies. And Interland too, the company that became web.com, it's a lot of web hosting companies that were acquired. So yeah, that company is a big compilation of acquired companies.
See, there are, it seems to me, some companies whose names aren't household names, but who acquire a lot. And if you're mm-hmm. in your space, they probably acquired or tried to acquire a lot of your competitors. If you even have a conversation mm-hmm. with them, they almost start asking you if they could buy you out. That's the way that they interact with people, it seems like. I don't know that web.com is like that, but I've noticed that there are some companies that very quickly start asking, can I acquire you?
That came early on, yeah. I mean, I have a feeling that, like, had that first conversation when we met David, if it was like, no, we're not selling, I mean, I don't think they were going to keep trying. I really don't. They might have come back a year or two later if they were still interested, but, you know, we had to have shown interest. Mm-hmm. And we did show interest, so.
All right. Let me see what else. Actually, before I get into the sale or what happened after the sale or actually, after you left, we already talked about after the sale. I got to ask you a little bit more about you and your relationship with Scott. Uh-huh. You guys were polar opposites.
Yes.
How do you work with a co-founder who you like, who nevertheless is so diametrically opposed to your way of thinking?
I think it's really, okay, let's take a step back, right? Like if you were an independent owner and it was just you, sole yep. proprietor, you're going to go down a lot of paths that you probably shouldn't go down mm-hmm. just because it's only your mindset. I honestly think if you have a partner who is trustworthy, because that's number one, right? Like you could have the most visionary partner in the world, but if he's not trustworthy or she's not trustworthy somewhere down the road, it's all going to fall apart. And if there was one word I could use to describe Scott, it's extremely trustworthy. Like he is that guy that will not lie to you no matter how bad the situation is. It's actually an interesting personality in a lot of ways, because a lot of people sometimes they want to be lied to when things are bad.
Yep.
And Scott was always that guy that would just like come right out and say it, and you'd be like, wow, you know. But I think what it does is it puts you somewhere in the middle. When you have an opposing viewpoint for virtually everything you want to do.
Oh, did I just lose you?
See? I still see you.
Sorry, there we go. Sorry, when you were saying that.
Yeah, so I think when you surround yourself with opposing viewpoints in any company, right, you're going to probably get it right because you see with tunnel vision, you know, like the way you want it to be, and then somebody else can be like, no, that's totally wrong, you know, and you go back and forth and back and forth, and then you come up with something that's just perfect. Where I think it in corporate environments, it's to the extreme because you're like in a matrix organization, you're working with 10 different people and 10 different departments, and it's almost impossible to accomplish anything because you get that person in the middle, the one to the right, the one to the left, and you end up just going back and forth, and then basically you get tired of fighting the fight. So they're actually kind of, I think a lot of times corporate environments are kind of counterproductive, because if you have a great idea, sometimes you just don't really feel like fighting for the idea because it's so late, you know, so exhausting. But I think for us, it built a really good company because we really are like, I'm total opposites. Total opposites.
I can see how that would be helpful, though. My brother and I started a business together right out of school, and we were very different, and it helped us. The battles even helped sharpen our perspective.
It did for us, too. We spent a good portion of our lives arguing.
Us, but too. Not necessarily – not in a bad way. Definitely not, but just constantly debating.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me do a quick plug here, and then I want to ask you a question that maybe is a little uncomfortable to ask, but I think it's important to ask. And the plug is for Mixergy Premium. And you know, guys, you've heard me talk about Mixergy Premium for a long time, but I want to talk instead of directly about it to tell you about this guy named Derek Capo, who runs Next Step China, who emailed me recently and said, Andrew, if not for Mixergy, I would have shut down my business. So I immediately emailed him back and said how appreciative I was to hear that, but asked him why, what happened? He said, you know, I don't run my business, he tells me, in Silicon Valley. I don't run my business with a lot of entrepreneurs around me. I'm kind of my own little island here, but I'm nevertheless trying to build my business. And because I'm my own little island, he says, I need help knowing how do I build my website? What mistakes should I be avoiding? How do I hire people? How do I get customers, et cetera? And Mixergy Premium was his way of learning, the way that many people here in San Francisco might get together for a drink and ask each other questions and understand how they should be building their businesses and know what mistakes to stay away from. For him, it was listening to Mixergy as he was building his business. And as a result, he built it so big that I invited him to do an interview, and we recorded it recently. And the reason that he likes Mixergy Premium, he said, is, you know, there are all these different areas of business that you need to know. For hiring, for example, he said, listening to Noah Kagan talk about how to hire interns, how to prize the position, how to give them tasks that will give you feedback on whether they're the right fit or not, helped him hire his staff of people. He said, I'm trying to think of some of the other people that he talked about. He figured out how to get traffic through one of the ad buying courses. Actually, it was a course on how to build a business with Rob Walling. He took that course and he understood how to buy traffic because of something that Rob talked about. So all these little pieces of the puzzle are what we as entrepreneurs need to know to build our companies. I've been doing this for years. He's a premium member for years, and it's worked for him. And if you've been listening to me and haven't tried it, I urge you to go to mixergypremium.com and try it for yourself. Listen to these great conversations with entrepreneurs. And I'd say even more than that, try out the courses that are exclusive to premium members, where you get to see an entrepreneur turn on his computer screen, show you step by step what he's done, or set up his steps for how to get traffic, how to get PR, how to hire people, and walk you through how to do it yourself. It's all at mixergypremium.com. And Derek, congratulations. And everyone else, I hope you go and sign up right now. As a salesman, how do you think I did with that, Joe?
Very good.
You know what I seem to do? I appreciate the compliment, but what I notice when I listen back is I talk too quickly when I talk about my stuff, and I jam too much in.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I would say that.
Right?
I need that. To overall, slow it. I was interested in what you were saying, so I was listening, but I've actually had that complaint too, because I do a lot of webinars for 3DCart, and when I first started, I was not very good at it because I'm not super social. You know, like I am social, but you know, with webinars, I was, I started talking really fast, and like some of the complaints came from the webinar. Like, this guy, he talks too fast. You know, so I actually spent some time practicing so that I could actually not talk fast. And then I got lots of compliments. People were like, oh, he's so informative and talks just right. You know, so I worked at it and I got the pace down right. But you're right. You really said a lot in a very short period of time.
I gotta remember. I'm almost like rushing through it because I feel like, well, this is a commercial. People don't want to spend too long in a commercial. I don't know. I need to get my pacing to a place where it feels like I'm proud to talk about it, and that it doesn't feel like it's taking up a lot of time.
I agree.
Thanks. So the challenge is in real time to recognize that I'm even doing it and then to correct it. But one of the beauties of doing this as often as I do is that I have a lot of time to practice. All right. Here's the thing. I'm looking over your shoulder, and you just mentioned the company that you're with, 3DCart. Mm-hmm. Great company. I can understand why you'd be there, except for one thing. You just sold a business for millions of dollars. Why not go and start another business? Why work with, I mean, they're great people. Why work for someone else?
I think that you basically answered it. It's great people.
I mean, you could go and have a barbecue with them, have a beer with them, go on vacation with them. But why not start your own business where you get to call the shots? That's one of the problems that you had with web.com.
I did it for 20 years. This is actually 3D Cart's like a startup that I didn't have to be a, like, I didn't find it, but it's like a startup. It operates like a startup. It's a very fun place to work with fun people and fun things. I mean, it's like, it actually to me is how Solid Cactus started. So I'm in a place where I can actually make a difference and help. My knowledge can help this company grow, you know, and it's.
Why not start your own business?
You've got. I live. I think about it. I do think about it a lot. Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm always going to be an entrepreneur at heart. I'm 41, you know, so my life isn't over, you know. I do think about it a lot. I do. But I enjoy this product. And I really like working for 3D Cart. It's just for me, it's a. It's like a, it's Solid Cactus in 2004. So it's just a lot of fun for me.
Do you ever say to Gonzalo, who runs a company, I got FU money. You can't tell me what to do.
You know, Gonzalo treats me like an entrepreneur. That's the most interesting thing is he lets me do my own thing here. So I what more could I ask for, right? I get to still be an entrepreneur just with his money.
The site is beautiful. It's 3dcart.com for anyone who wants to check it out. And you guys, basically, it is like Solid Cactus. You give people the tools that they need to sell online.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful, wonderful software product. If I had actually started Solid Cactus with 3D Cart, I would have never had a business because the software does like almost everything that Yahoo store merchants were trying to do all these years. And it's really just a technology timing thing, right? Like Yahoo store's customer base were people who started selling online in 1999 and 2000, and they became very successful with a very robust, stable platform that really didn't do a lot of things. And 3D Cart and some of our competitors even are products that are really stable products that do a lot of things.
It's an online shopping cart with the features that you need today, with the design that you need, and it just works. You don't need to hire a Solid Cactus to build it for you.
You really don't. You really don't. You can do amazing things with it. And like I said, you know, Gonzalo, I don't know if you've ever met him. He's a really killer guy. I just really like him a lot.
I really would like to meet him. How old's the company?
It was a very small company for a very long time, and it really started growing. I want to say it really started to take off around 07, maybe, right? But he started it like right out of college.
I got to get him on to do an interview.
He's a fascinating story too. He's just he's a developer, right? So he's – I don't want to say shy, but you know that mentality like engineers, you know, they're kind of different.
He's a Mixergy fan, right?
Oh, for sure.
Can you help me get him on here by giving him Jeremy's URL? In fact, I'll email it to you so you don't have to remember so that we do a pre-interview with him, do it right, and then I'll get him on here to do an interview?
I'll try.
All right. I'd love it. All right. And if people want to connect with you and say thank you for doing this interview, what's a good way for them to do that?
My Twitter handle is my name. It's JoePalko. I do use Facebook a lot. I'm an addict. That's well, maybe the gambling transferred over to social media. I don't gamble anymore, but I do social media like crazy. I love blogging. I have my own blog, but I really don't. It's my name, josephpalko.com. Maybe now that people are actually listening to me, I'll start putting some interesting stuff there. I'm usually babbling about something that's not e-commerce related. You know, even when you like Scott and I being totally different people, you know, Scott will constantly comment on my Facebook and say like, why do you post that stuff? You're a professional. And I'm like, you know what? I'm in this for me. I don't care if you don't like me, don't follow me. You know, so.
Well, the way that I got him to do the interview was, I think it was Facebook. The first time I ever got anyone to do an interview through Facebook, I think was Scott. I couldn't believe Facebook actually is a way that professionals connect to do business. And he did, and it worked. And I can see why people would want to follow you and chat with you there. And of course, I'm on the website, josephpalko.com. And I hope people check it out and encourage you to keep blogging. Thank you so much for doing this interview.
Come do a demo.
And 3D Cart, go do a demo.
Free demo. No free credit demo. Card required.
I see, actually, right there over your shoulder. 3dcart.com/free. Thank you for doing this interview, and thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.